Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest Norton Rose Fulbright Split the Difference podcast, which explores divergence and convergence between the EU and UK regulatory regimes in the market space. My name is Simon Lovegrove, Global Director of Financial Services Knowledge here at Norton Rose Fulbright. And today I'm joined by Hannah Meakin, Financial Services Partner in our London office, Claudia Nagelkirk, Financial Services Partner in our Amsterdam office, Anna Carrier, a legal consultant in the Financial Services Regulatory and Government Relations Practice in Brussels, and Georgia Karamani, a senior associate in our Financial Services Practice in London. Welcome to all of you. In this podcast, we will take a look at the recently proposed changes to the EU version of the European Markets Infrastructure Regulation, commonly referred to as EMIR 3 or EMIR 3.0, which comprises of a proposed regulation and directive, and how the new rules compare with the UK regime. As many of our listeners will no doubt know, on 7th February this year, negotiators from the European Parliament's Economic and Monetary Affairs Committee, ECON, reached provisional agreement with the Belgian Presidency of the Council of the EU on EMIR 3. Once the agreement is formally adopted, EMIR 3 will enter into force following publication in the Official Journal of the European Union. So that's by way of background. So if we could kick off with what is probably the most controversial of the proposed changes, the requirement to maintain an active account with an EU central counterparty or CCP and clearing a certain minimum volume through such EU CCP. Claudia, perhaps you could start by giving us some colour on what this new requirement is and how it all came about.
Thanks, Simon. And of course, so maybe we should first take a step back. And ESMA, a couple of years ago, in one of its reports, concluded that the provision of certain clearing services provided by the two UK CCPs were of substantial systemic importance for the EU and could, if faced with financial distress, threaten the financial stability in the EU. So against this backdrop, one of the key policy aims behind EMIR 3 is to improve the competitiveness of the EU CCPs and to reduce the concentration of exposure to the systematically important third country CCPs, including those in the UK. So to that end, EMIR 3 would require EU financial counterparties and EU non-financial counterparties that cross the thresholds to clear a certain proportion of the products that have been identified by ESMA as of being substantial systemic importance through the active accounts at the EU CCPs. So the derivatives that would be captured under that obligation are interest rate derivatives denominated in euro and Polish zloty, credit default swaps denominated in euro, and short-term interest rate denominated in euro.
Thank you, Claudia. Are there any reporting or disclosure requirements attached to this or any other related requirements worth flagging?
Yes. So relevant counterparties would need to calculate their activities in the specified categories of the derivatives contract at the EU CCPs and report these calculations to their competent authority to evidence the compliance. There's also a requirement on clearing members and clients that provide clearing services on both an EU CCP and a recognized third country CCP to inform their clients about the possibility of clearing through the EU CCP, but also to report to their competent authority the scope of clearing undertaken at recognized third country CCPs. And it also might be helpful to remind the listeners that in keeping with the broader policy aims of EMIR 3, there are proposed changes relating to the process for authorization and approval of new services and activities for EU CCPs, but also the recognition of third country CCPs.
Okay, thanks, Claudia. Moving to the UK, Hannah, have we seen any similar proposals in the UK, or is this an EU-specific initiative for the moment? And also, what are the likely implications for UK counterparties in this context?
Well, the good news is that this is an EU-specific complication for the moment, and no active account proposals have been made in relation to UK EMIR so far. However, that's not to say that UK counterparties, or in fact any third country counterparties, i.e. those outside of the EU, will not be affected. Due to the new regulatory obligations that will become applicable to EU financial counterparties and EU NFC Plus, when third country counterparties, including UK counterparties, trade with them, they will be indirectly forced to use the services of an EU CCP in order for the relevant trade to go through. In other words, UK counterparties will either need to stop trading with these EU financial counterparties and EU NFC Plus that are subject to the active account requirement, or submit to indirectly complying with the active account requirement themselves. Now, this is, of course, limited only to certain types of trades, as mentioned. So that's the interest rate derivatives denominated in euros and Polish zloty, CDS denominated in euro, and short-term interest rate derivatives denominated in euros. But still, it is a development that UK counterparties will need to be alive to. And in fact, this indirect type of compliance is not new to the EMIR universe. For example, EU EMIR margin requirements can also indirectly apply to non-EU counterparties in respect of derivative trades that they enter into with in-scope EU financial counterparties and NFC Plus at the moment. So the same applies under UK EMIR as well.
Okay, that's interesting. Thank you for the additional colour. Going back to the EU for a moment and moving on to another key change, this being that the clearing obligation threshold will be calculated differently. Anna, could you kindly talk us through the new calculation methodologies being proposed?
Sure, I will be happy to. So EMIR 3.0 introduces some changes in terms of how counterparties have to run their threshold calculations. In respect of financial counterparties, the revised methodology specifies that financial counterparties taking positions in OTC derivatives may calculate two alternative positions based on contracts entered into by the financial counterparty or by other entities within the group to which that financial counterparty belongs. And that is its uncleared positions or its aggregate month-end average positions in cleared and uncleared derivative contracts for the previous 12 months. And for calculating uncleared positions, which are defined as aggregate month-end average positions for the previous 12 months in derivative contracts that are not cleared by either an authorized EU CCP or recognized third country CCP, a financial counterparty must include all OTC contracts that are not cleared in an authorized or recognized CCP. And while calculating aggregate positions, the financial counterparty must include all OTC contracts. And ESMA is also mandated to develop via regulatory technical standards further specifications regarding the value of the clearing thresholds applicable to aggregate positions. And in respect of calculations by non-financial counterparties, revised EMIR specifies that it must include all OTC derivative contracts that are not cleared by CCP that are entered into by that non-financial counterparty that runs the calculation and that are not for hedging purposes for either the entity running the calculation or its group. And ESMA will have to develop draft regulatory technical standards specifying the criteria when a contract is a hedging contract and the values of clearing thresholds for uncleared positions, as well as the mechanism triggering a review of the values of the clearing thresholds. And finally, this is just worthwhile to note, is that the revised EMIR requires each member state to designate an authority responsible for ensuring that the non-financial counterparties meet their EMIR obligations.
Thanks, Hannah. Georgia, if I could draw you in now, would you say that this is another area of divergence between the EU EMIR and UK EMIR?
Certainly, yes, Simon. So although these calculations, or rather the base for these calculations, is even now not identical between the EU and the UK, the EMIR 3.0 changes definitely deepen the degree of divergence between the two. It is also worth flagging that no similar changes are currently being proposed in the UK, and so it is not clear at this stage whether such divergence will be resolved anytime soon. Now, groups that are active in both the EU and the UK, i.e. that operate from or trade with counterparties in either jurisdiction, would need to continue, as they have been doing to date, running both EU EMIR and UK EMIR calculations. Let's take an example, a UK group that trades across both the UK and the EU. Under UK EMIR, and depending on whether relevant trading entities are classified as financial counterparties or NFCs, the group would need to run its UK EMIR calculation on the basis of OTC derivative trades, i.e. those not traded on a UK or equivalent regulated market, which includes EU exchanges. Given the EMIR 3.0 changes, when the same group comes to run the EU EMIR calculations, it will need to fundamentally change the base of its methodology and rather focus on those derivative transactions that have not been cleared on an EU authorised or recognised CCP, which importantly includes also UK CCPs at the moment. These changes certainly add more administrative burden for global groups. However, they also potentially leave some room for these groups to reduce their EU EMIR threshold results. For instance, for a group that opts for high volumes of clear trades or is willing to move to that direction, it may be possible to fall below the clearing threshold, even if all trades are OTC. That is not to say that this would be an easy or cheap way out, but it would be one of the potential consequences of the proposed EMIR 3.0 changes, intended or unintended by the regulators.
Okay, thanks, Georgia. That's really helpful. Anna, could you possibly talk us through the EMIR 3.0 changes in respect of an initial margin model validation? These seem to have captured the market's attention.
Yes, indeed. So on the basis that many counterparties use industry-wide initial margin models to comply with their initial margin obligations under EU EMIR, EMIR 3.0 provides that the European Banking Authority would assume a central validation function and assist competent authorities in their approval processes, albeit the validation responsibility would remain with the competent authorities. And the EBA will be charging an annual fee to financial counterparties and non-financial counterparties using the PROFOM models, which will be proportionate to the monthly average outstanding notional amount of cleared OTC derivatives over the last 12 months of the relevant counterparties. So interestingly, the latest iteration of the proposed EMIR 3.0 text also suggests a more limited scope of application for the supervisory procedures required to ensure validation to credit institutions and investment firms of a certain size, so namely a monthly average outstanding notional amount of non-centrally cleared OTC derivatives higher than or equal to 750 billion euros.
Okay, thanks, Anna. Coming back to the UK now, Hannah, what is the position in the UK in respect of the validation of initial margin models?
Yeah, so the PRA and the FCA in the UK have decided not to proceed with a supervisory pre-approval requirement for initial margin models at this point. They are instead going to leverage their existing powers and frameworks in order to ensure that the necessary modelling requirements are met.
Okay, understood. Thanks. Anna, could you now take us through the EMIR 3.0 changes relating to the intra-group exemptions and treatment of third country central counterparties? These amendments are making it much more straightforward for groups to rely on intra-group exemption. Isn't that correct?
No problem, Simon. And yes, this is correct. So until now, firms looking to rely on intra-group exemption had to ensure that the Commission had made an equivalence decision in respect of the third country jurisdiction that their group counterparty was established in. Without the equivalence decision, it is not currently possible to rely on an intra-group exemption. So that was something which has been very heavily criticized by the industry. However, EMIR 2.0 would now introduce a requirement for the group counterparty not to be established in a jurisdiction that is identified as a risk for AML purposes or non-cooperative for tax purposes. So there is this process is intended to be simplified in that sense. There will no longer be a requirement for the third country jurisdiction to be deemed equivalent. And as you said, this makes reliance on intra-group exemption a lot simpler, and that is all for clearing margin or reporting requirements.
Okay, and Georgia, are there any similar changes expected in the UK?
Not that we know of at the moment. So insofar as UK EMIR is concerned, UK counterparties seeking to rely on an intra-group exemption would still need to consider the availability of an equivalence decision and to carefully consider the scope and limitations of any such decision. The treatment of intra-group trades between an EU counterparty and a UK counterparty should generally be consistent between EU EMIR and UK EMIR on the basis that the UK is unlikely or very unlikely to be on the EU high risk list, and equally the UK has granted equivalence to the EU. However, differences between the two regimes will be more acute in respect of intra-group trades with counterparties outside the UK or the EU.
Thank you. Florja, are there any other EMIR 3 changes that would be worth discussing?
Yeah, so I think there are a couple more changes that I would like to flag. So firstly, AMR 3 introduces an exemption from the bilateral margining requirements for single stock options and equity indexed options, with a process for ESMA to continue monitoring relevant developments to other jurisdictions. And this is particularly interesting given that the existing temporary exemption technically expired on the 4th of January this year, but a further extension was proposed by the European supervisory authorities and a no action opinion was issued.
Thank you. That's very helpful. Pausing there and turning briefly to the UK. Hannah, any relevant UK developments?
Thanks, Simon. Yes, from a UK perspective, the PRA and the FCA have extended the corresponding temporary exemption under UK EMIR for single stock equity and index options by an additional 2 years. Although there are no proposals for legislative amendments that would introduce a permanent exemption at the moment, we understand that this is the intention of the UK regulators who are gathering relevant evidence from the market. In any event, and albeit potentially temporarily, the EU and the UK positions do seem to align.
Understood. Florja, over to you for your second point.
Thank you. No problem. I just wanted to flag that AMR 3 introduces an exemption for the clearing obligation for financial counterparties or non-financial counterparties that crosses the thresholds, entering into a transaction with a pension scheme arrangement that is established and authorized in a third country, provided that such pension scheme is exempt from the clearing obligation under its local legislation.
Very interesting. Hannah, what would this mean for UK pension schemes?
From a UK perspective, the clearing obligation exemption for pension schemes has been extended to the 18th of June 2025. And so UK pension schemes would be able to trade with EU counterparties without needing to clear. Interestingly, this is contrary to their EU peers, who would not be able to benefit from the new EMIR 3 exemption because they're not third country schemes.
Okay, thanks, Anna. Anna, anything else from your side?
Yeah, so just very briefly, I wanted to flag that EMIR 3.0 would allow non-financial counterparties that become subject to the margin requirements for the first time a four-month implementation period before they need to comply. And NFC's pluses, so those exceeding three clearing thresholds, would also have a four-month implementation period to carry out marking-to-market and provide valuation updates. And just one final piece of update is that EMIR 3.0 introduces an exemption from the clearing obligation for those OTC derivatives that are initiated and concluded as the result of eligible post-trade risk reduction exercise. And the text sets out detailed criteria for such eligible post-trade risk reduction exercises.
Okay, thanks, Anna. Georgia, any similar UK changes coming up?
Unfortunately, no, not that we know at this stage.
Okay, thanks. My thanks to my colleagues for sharing their thoughts today on this very interesting topic. Previous editions of our Split the Difference podcast can be found on our main podcast webpage located on the Regulation Tomorrow blog. We will, of course, continue to track developments on the blog too. For those of you researching markets-related legislation, don't forget that there is a very useful library located on our markets webpage on the Norton Rose Fulbright website. Many thanks for listening. Goodbye.